Hey, Parshas Shoftim, Perchav Aleph Pasuk Ches. Pasuk says toward the very end, it's dealing with Egla Rufa. Okay, so what Egla Rufa is when someone is killed in between two cities and you don't know who the murderer is. You find the two closest cities, the Sanhedrin, the Zakenim of both cities. They come in, they see that there was a person that was murdered. They take an Egla, this calf, this female cow, female young cow. And they take it and they shecht it in a weird way. They don't shecht it in the normal way. They take it with the back of an axe toward the back of its neck and they kill it in an area called Nachal Eisen, which is an area where no one else ever was. There was no, it was never, no grasses there. Nothing was grown there. Nothing like that. And then they say the following, Kapir la'am kli yisrael shepetis Hashem. The Kohanim say out loud, let this be a kapara for your people Israel that you have redeemed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu al titein dam naki b'keravam kli yisrael. Do not allow the blood to be spilled innocently among your people b'nei yisrael. V'nechapir la'adam, and allow the blood to be atoned. And then in Pasuk Tes it says, V'atot tvar dam naki b'kevecha. You should get rid of all of those that spill the guilt of the innocent blood from among you. Kizatia yashav b'nei Hashem. You're going to do the right thing from the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, Mori Nebuchim, the Rambam Mori Nebuchim, it's in Chela Gimel Parak Mem, says that by doing this strange process of Egla Rufa, the murderer is going to be revealed to us. Beis Din will be able to then kill him. The idea is that having Beis Din go out to the cities nearby and to ask everybody about this body, if anybody had seen anything or known anything, and then eventually bringing a calf and killing it in a weird way, in an abnormal way, having people join them so they could see the process, and more people coming around, is going to make it more likely that someone's going to stand up and say, oh, I know about this. I saw a guy leaving. Oh, I thought that was really weird. Oh, I saw that guy when he was leaving. He was walking with this guy. That would help Beis Din to be able to figure out what was going on during that time. The Marsha says the exact same thing, Sota Mem Vav, that everyone will know what happened. Someone is going to realize who the murderer was, and they'll give that information over to Beis Din. The Ben Yoyada and Sota, right over there, this the Ben Ishkai says, that's why we call it Egla Arufa. Egla is Ayin Gullah, that our eyes will be revealed to know what's going to be, so that we complete this mitzvah and we can get rid of the murderer itself. The Ramban says as well at the end of the Parsha, and he adds that he believes it somewhat works like the Sira Mishtaleach. The Ramban is a very unique view of Sira Mishtaleach, what it means when you send out the goat on Yom Kippur. One of the goats is brought in the base of Mikdash, the other one is brought out and then thrown off the side of the cliff. He says that it's given over for the purpose of something to the Satan, an idea like that, and therefore this also, as well as appeasing, I'm using the air quotes over here, of the Satan, to tell us that we should keep our, he should keep our his distance from us. It's a weird idea, but with the Egla Rufa as well, it has something to do with that. Obviously, it's extremely deep, and who knows if we'll be able to really get to the depths of what the Ramban means by that, but the idea is that it's supposed to be somewhat of a of an idea of giving to the Satan so that the Satan doesn't accuse us or do anything to us. That's the idea of what the Ramban is saying. Rav Hirsch, as our final explanation of what Egla Rufa is, says what we're doing to the Egla Rufa is referring to what we would do to the murderer if we could find him. If we knew who the murderer was, this is what we do. Such a person who is willing to kill another human being is like a cow who has never worked and never pulled a yoke in his life. In other words, totally useless. It says like this. It says it's similar to what ended up happening by the first murderer, Cain. When we deal with what happened by Cain, when you work the ground, he was told, when you work the ground after killing Hevel and the ground swallowed up his blood, when you work the ground, it will no longer yield its produce to you. You'll have to wander from place to place in order to receive food. It's not really a korban. It's a showing that we're willing to do something, making sure God knows what we want to do if we found the murderer. We haven't found the murderer. We haven't found him yet. But this is what we're willing to do, and we're relying on God to finish off the job for us, to do everything else for us. That's the idea of Rav Hirsch, represents what this Egla Rufa is representing. Rashi, the Rashbam, and the Sforno say a little bit different. They're not going into the reason of Egla Rufa. They're explaining, simply put, how this works. They say, if the murderer is found after the Egla Rufa happens, let's say you do the Egla Rufa, and then two Edim get up, two witnesses get up and say, we know who it was, we warned him, and we said, don't do this or you'll be killed, and he said, Apal PK, nonetheless, I'm doing it anyway. If that happens, even though you already did the Egla Rufa, you still kill the murderer. That's what the Rashi, Rashbam, and Sforno say. We put him on trial. We do everything you're supposed to do, even though the Egla Rufa is a kapara. He just said, kapar la'am chayisrael, through the Egla Rufa, even though that is a kapara for him. It makes no difference. We do what we need to do to get rid of the murderer. The idea is that if we can't find the murderer, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge, and Hashem will take care of everything that we need. He'll make sure that the murderer gets what he's supposed to get. But if you do come upon someone, do not think that the Egla Rufa took care of this already. All right, and the murderer is off scot-free. No, the Egla Rufa is not enough. Bring him to Basin, bring him to justice, and do what you can. Right? That's the idea of that this pasuk represents, except from Rashi to Rashbam in the Sforno. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says this is what it means to destroy Rishayim from this world. Doing so is Yashur Be'enei Hashem. Any schus that we get from doing that means in the future, when there's no longer Ritzicha, there's no murder, there's no war, because Mashiach is here, and everything is peaceful, that will allow for peace to reign throughout the entire world. If we do this, if we try to get rid of murderers in our midst, if we do everything we can, then everything's going to work out well, things will work out okay, and everything will be there. The Ibn Ezra says it's the opposite effect, and a little cool thing. If you do what is correct in Yashar in the eyes of Hashem, there will be no murder, and everything will be better. It's not that when there's no murder, then there will be a reward given to us. It's the opposite. It's that there will be no murder because we're doing a Yashar Bein Hashem. If we're trying to do the best we can, even though obviously the judicial system is flawed, and the only way to kill somebody is by having two Edom and an Azhara, a warning, which is a Hasra, a warning, in order to get the guy, nonetheless, we're going to make sure that that happens. The way that Ibn Ezra explains it is schar mitzvah mitzvah, schar avera avera. That the mitzvah leads to another mitzvah, and avera leads to another avera. Says the Talmid Asher Shtrumbach explains it. It puts the onus on us. It's on us to be mechanic our kids properly, to keep mitzvahs properly, and then these murders won't take place. If we teach our kids the correct path on what to do, and how to act, and what to do in every situation, then even though normally we get rewarded in the next world, nonetheless there will be something given to us in this world, and that reward will be that everybody will be peaceful, and things will be there. So this idea of Sanhedrin going out is the idea of showing all the kids what it's like when something like this happens. We shouldn't just take it, all right, somebody got killed, what can you do? You go out there and you do everything you can to find the murderer, and when you can't, you sacrifice a cow, which was an extremely expensive endeavor back then. And to use up a cow that you would normally use for meat, and to just shecht it and put, or to destroy it, kill it, and leave it in the middle of a valley for no one to partake from, that's like taking money and throwing it off a cliff. And tearing it up and saying, we're never going to use this ever again. That was a lot of stuff. And this is the idea. We feel like we're being destroyed from the fact that there's nothing there. But clearly there's something different. Yes, there's a schus that our mitzvos will keep us from doing these types of things, not that. But we're missing something here. If you look very carefully at Rashi, when he says, if you then find the murderer. You do everything with the Egla Rufa, and then you find the murderer. It seems that the process of Egla Rufa is not separate from finding the murderer. It's that if you do this, you will find the murderer. You're going to find him. Now, it makes no sense that killing a female calf all of a sudden is going to lead to be a kapara. How in the world is that a real kapara? And all of a sudden we're going to find something. How in the world is this going to take care of the innocent bloodshed that was given? Well, how could that be? So the Be'er Basada says there's a hint in this Rashi to something much, much bigger, something huge. And when that happens, everyone has to take it very seriously because this isn't a joke. When this happens, you have to take it and say, ah, something huge just happened, and to really, really take it on for yourself. What does the Be'er Basada mean? Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel on this Pasuk, on Pasuk Ches, says an amazing thing happens when Klal Yisrael does the mitzvah of Egla Rufa. After the Kohanim plead with Hashem to rid them of this innocent bloodshed, we didn't do it. Please, Hashem, give us a kapara. An army of worms, probably maggots, but we'll call them worms, it makes it easier, come out from the stomach of the cow that was killed and goes to the place where the killer lives. They go to the area where that killer was. They climb up upon the guy's body. And they drag him to Beis Din, these worms, and the worms allow him to be judged in Beis Din. Now, I'll be honest with you, I'm not so sure what Beis Din's going to do. Because imagine a guy comes into Beis Din with worms dragging him inside. Does that mean that he's guilty? I mean, yeah. but you can't kill that guy. Beis Din doesn't have the power to just kill because they think a guy murdered someone. There were no Edom, there was no Asra. They would basically have to put him in jail for the rest of his life, but nothing more than that. But it's amazing, absolutely amazing, says Targum Yonasan Mizil, that the worms from the dead cow itself catch the murderer. The Pardes Yosef says, it seems obviously that there's something supernatural happening, but there's no evidence whatsoever. But it seems like the guy himself will admit his guilt. He's going to admit it. When he's dragged into court by these worms, he would come in and say, yes, obviously I did it. I can't believe this just happened, right? And what it means is not that Beis Din will kill the man, but Beis Din will take care of this man. They'll make sure he never murders ever again. Whatever the punishment they can mete out, that's what they would go ahead and do. The Imre Shammai does say that they throw him in jail for an unspecific amount of time, basically until he dies. We only see that concept by Edus Miuchedes in the Gemara Makos. We don't see it by anything else, so it seems strange. But regardless, that's the idea of what happens over here, that the guy is thrown in jail for the rest of his life. The Panach Raza says the Egla is brought to a Makom Kasha to hint to something very, very harsh. The Panach Raza is a Rishon. If the Sefer was brought, put back together maybe a couple hundred years ago, 150 years ago, the Chida had this Sefer, but it was found in the Vatican archives, in which they put it together. If this murderer is not found, he says, worms come out not from the cow, but from the person who was killed, from the one who was murdered, from his body. There were little worms that come out, enter the body of the murderer, and kill the murderer. Meaning it comes out from the body of the murdered, and kills the murderer himself. Forget about the Egla. It has nothing to do with the Egla. He brings a Medrash Seichel Tov that says that the worms come from the Egla itself. And that the hint is the word Es Ha'Egla, saying Gematria's Tola'a Ba. This worm comes. Tola'a Ba is the Gematria 514. Es Ha'Egla is the Gematria 514. It hints to how the guy is going to be killed. He says it makes sense. Since the only reason the Egla is dying in this strange fashion, without any Shechita, is because this murderer killed somebody. Therefore, this cow loses an opportunity to be shechted properly and eat it. Being shechted is a huge schus for the animal involved. We know that from the story of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. In the Gemara Bava Metzia, a cow comes up to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, a calf goes up to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi and lies its head in his lap, crying that he didn't want to be shechted. And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi said, Zil, lekach natzarta, this is what you're created for. The calf knew that it wasn't for that person to shecht, it was for someone else. And for that reason, the Rebbe didn't have mercy on him. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi got yisurin for 13 years because he didn't allow the calf to be shechted properly, possibly by him instead of somebody else. This animal that didn't get the shechita properly wants to take revenge for not dying in the proper fashion, and therefore is allowed to be directly involved in the process, said the Panach Raza, in that the worm comes from it, according to this opinion. But it's true maybe according to both. Maybe the Egla is involved and the worm comes from it. Maybe it comes from the one who was murdered. But both reasons are for a kapara. They're missing something. Something happened to it, and it has to take revenge for allowing it to be killed in such a fashion, and that's what ends up happening. The Medrash Haggadah here says the cow first rots. It doesn't happen immediately. The cow first rots. Maggots form within the rotting carcass. I hope nobody's eating. But maggots form within the rotting carcass. Those maggots begin to walk toward the house of the murderer and they kill him themselves. If the men of Sanhedrin, he says, were great people and the Kohanim as well, this would happen. There would be no need to do the Arifa. It would happen before the Arifa. Before the Egla is killed, it would happen that these maggots form. I guess the animal would die because it seems strange that the animal has to rot for it to happen, but there was no Arifa. So I'm not so sure, but it seems that something was there. If it wasn't, they weren't worthy, then it happened only after the refund, then it happened. But no matter what, it's going to happen. The Rabbeinu B'chaya seems to say that there was only one worm, one massive worm that forms from the body, and that goes and kills the murderer. And he calls it a secret beyond the nature of the world. That's the idea behind it. The Rabbeinu Ephraim says, the worms go to the house of the murderer, ulam mosro. They give him over. They give him over to Beis Din. And then it says, v'gamo chalto. They also consume him. Because I guess Beis Din can't take care of him. So the worms themselves do the job by bringing him to Beis Din so that everybody knows what happened to him, and then consuming his body. So they do both. They publicize his evil deed and his sin, and then afterward give him over to Beis Din for everything to happen. The Razan Ameir says he heard that from a great Makubal, that a few days after the Egla is killed, one huge maggot comes out from the body of the cow and sticks to the clothing of the guy who murdered. And he can't get it off no matter how much he tries. This huge maggot or worm sticks there and cannot be taken off. That will be talked about by everyone, and eventually people will realize, Beis Din will hear, and say, that's the murderer, and it came from that cow over there. But instead of it dragging him to Beis Din, or instead of it killing the guy, instead it publicizes the sin, and then Beis Din gets involved. Reb Chaim Kanievsky says in Tami Dekra, he quotes the Shlach Adash, this will only happen, and we said this based on the Midrash Agadah as well, if the people of that generation were unbelievable tzaddikim. Only if there were great tzaddikim. You cannot have this happen stam. For such a massive miracle to happen, whether the worm is going to kill him, or drag him to Beis Din, or even just stick to his clothing, you need it to be done in such a way where tzaddikim are involved. Because without that, it's never going to happen. What's up?
Well, there's such a tzaddikim, why die in the first place?
You're right. In other words, we do see that the Kohen Gadol is punished for not davening, that even an accidental murder doesn't happen in his time. It seems that there were tzaddikim in charge, meaning there were great tzaddikim who were in charge, but there were some base people in Klal Yisrael. So there were great tzaddikim. It doesn't have to be that every person in Klal Yisrael was a tzaddik, but that there were unbelievable tzaddikim living at the time who deserved for this to happen when this happened around their city. That you'd have to say something like that. The Chida says the remez is the sofe tevis of the words, the ato tiva'er hadam hanoki is rima. The ato tiva'er hadam hanoki is hey resh mem yud. And that's rima for a worm to refer to these midrashim and possibly yamaher, that it should be done quickly, that it should happen very quickly. You should know, by the way, the reason why it's in sofe tevis and it's out of order as well from the Paneach Raza is because this only happens in the end. If you can't find the murderer, and then the worms come be'irvuv as a huge group, right, in a whole contingency, not just one after another, but in a whole group of worms one after the other. It also reminds us that our end, sofe tevis, is filled with worms, and that's the rima, a mixture of worms. It reminds us of who we are over here. It seems like the worms are being mavir the innocent blood, and that's the hint behind the pasuk. The atot devar damanoki. If you do this, you will cause the innocent blood to be shed completely. You'll take it completely out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses these worms in order for that to happen. The Ben Yoyada also says that Egla and Nachal are the same gematria as 196. As coats refers to the worms hooking themselves onto the murderer in order to bring him into court itself. I'll tell you, when I was in Eretz Yisrael once, I once saw the coolest thing I've ever seen before in my life. I was bringing my kid to Gan, so it was probably like 9 o'clock in the morning before I was going to yeshiva. And I was going, I lived in Ramat Eshkol. This was before Ramat Eshkol became All-American. It was like when there were still Israelis there. But I was living right by Mavar HaMitla. And I crossed over Mavar HaMitla from one side to the other, from our side to the Sanhedrin side. And as I was crossing to bring my kid over, I was pushing him in a stroller. And I ran over what looked like two little lines in the street. So I didn't think of anything, right? I went there. On my way back, right, to go to the mirror, so I was on my way to yeshiva. As I was on my way back, I looked down and I saw that there were like holes and then other lines formed around it. So I looked down, like, you know, like you first see something, you don't think something's wrong. Then I looked a little down. It was a line of caterpillars. I have never seen anything like this before in my life. A line of caterpillars, and I followed it. It was going up a tree, not down, up a tree, right? Two lines of these caterpillars going up a tree, both going to the same place, and I couldn't see. It was a tall tree, and they were all going up there, and then I followed the line the other way around. Yes, I was a little bit late to yeshiva that morning. I think this was worth it. It's never worth it, but for me, it was worth it. I followed it all the way. They came from a little hole in rocks on the other side. Literally thousands of these little caterpillars. They weren't maggots, they weren't worms, but caterpillars going all the way up into the tree itself. I've never seen anything like it before in my life. I looked up everywhere I could. I've never seen anyone that talks about it. I honestly think I'm the only person. If I had a phone on me at the time, I would have taken a picture of it so that people would actually believe me and not think that it was just a dream. But I am telling you, I saw this with my very eyes. Never seen anything like it. The first thing I thought of was, like, Egla Rufa, somebody just killed someone and I'm finding the murderer. But to the best of my knowledge, there was nobody up in the tree and I was really, really upset. But this, I couldn't believe it. It's an unbelievable thing. Now, what's the pshat behind this? I have a lot. And because I'm on Torah Anytime now, I can't tell you my own ideas. I have 7 different ideas that come from this based on the Rishonim Acharonim. When you guys ask me later on, I'll tell it to you, but I'm not going to say it completely. But the idea from the Sefer HaKavanos, which is a Sefer on Kabbalah, says that every animal, even worms, are out there to do something in the world. Everything has a purpose. Even a maggot that forms from the garbage that's in your backyard, that maggot has a purpose. Whether it's to feed some other animal that's there, whether it's to make a fly that allows that fly to fly into your face and annoy you, I don't care what it is. Something is there. It's there for a reason. There is a purpose behind it. In this case, the purpose of these worms is to find the murderer and to take care of that in front of Beis Din. But every single animal, so when you go out there and you see something, they say, like, what's the purpose of this ant? Why did God make trillions and trillions of ants and flies and maggots and everything? Even maggots and even worms have a purpose, and the purpose is to get to something and to show you something that you wouldn't have seen otherwise. Show you what there is, aside from the fact that worms are obviously needed for the ground, because the ground would not be able to give forth its nutrients without the worms constantly eating and exuding, I guess you can say, the dirt from their bodies. It turns over the soil quite often, which allows everything to grow a lot better. But that's aside from the obvious purpose. The Me'ir HaSeinayim says the purpose of the worms is to silence the Satan. If you remember from the Ramban above, we said that the Egla Rufa was sort of like the Se'ir HaMishtaleach. It was like sending the goat off the cliff that was sort of like a gift of appeasement over to the Satan, where the king, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was telling us to do something in order to appease the Satan. I'm paraphrasing the Ramban. The Me'ir HaSeinayim says, the worms are to silence the Sam, silence the Satan, that we are doing anything we can to get rid of this evil, and although we don't have the ability to get rid of all of evil, we're doing everything we can to get rid of the evil that we have in front of us. Panim Yafos, this is the Haflah, says, based on Yuma, Pevavim Vez, when a person does tshuva me'av, tshuva out of love, he can turn his zdonos, his sins, into zchuyos, into merits, into mitzvos. You might think that doing tshuva would allow you to get a mitzvah save doing tshuva. Maybe it'll erase the sin that you have before, but you get a mitzvah save doing tshuva, you get rid of your sin, and that's good enough. Tshuva does so much more than that. It creates a mitzvah out of what you did that was wrong. You did something that was wrong. You turned it into a mitzvah by doing tshuva me'ava. You created a new reality. Something different happened. If you would look at your video, right, the video of your life, instead of you going and doing that thing, doing that, let's say you ate something that was usser, instead of eating something that was usser, there's like a little chink in the system. And then all of a sudden, something changes, and instead of eating that, you're eating, I don't know, let's just say, like the biggest bracha, you're eating at a bris milah. You're eating at a pidyon haben. And you're grabbing something, and something goes in right during that time, so you get a mitzvah out of your eating instead of the avera. That's what happens from tshuva me'ava. When you attempt to get rid of the evil around you and from within you, you're able to make great things happen. You can have miracles happen from you, says the Haflah. That's the idea of what happens over here and the purpose of what we're doing over here. The Chassam Sofer says, all you need to do is your ishtadlus. That's all we're doing. And even if it seems nothing will happen, don't worry, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved. You may not even know that when you kill that Egla Rufa, that there's a worm that comes out and kills the murderer. You're never going to know that. You're never going to realize it. You might not ever find out, because maybe the worms will bring it to Beis Din. Maybe not. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. You do your ishtadlus. Hashem is saying, just do what you need to do, and everything else I'll take care of. You don't have to worry about anything else. I got this. That's the idea of why. Yes, you need witnesses to kill. Yes, you need everything else to kill. It doesn't matter, says the Chassam Sofer. Do what you need to do, everything else will happen. And the Netziv says not necessarily about this instance. This murder already happened. This murder already occurred. There's nothing we can do about it. It's in the past. But in the future, nothing else will happen because of what you did over here. That's the assurance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I am taking care of this because right now you're doing Egla Rufa. Everyone's going to hear about it. Everybody's going to realize how chomer murder is. They're never going to murder ever again. They're going to say, we're never going to do this ever again. That's part of the idea of this Netziv. That's an amazing Netziv. There is an Amari Asad over here. There's a Amari Asad that goes through Rabbi Yehuda Asad. I'm not going to go through it. It's too much. Skip to the Malbim. The Malbim says there's something even deeper. If you can imagine, there's something deeper than worms coming out of the body of a cow and destroying the murderer. You can imagine this Malbim is saying something so much deeper. After Navos was killed by Izebel because Ahab wanted his land, Ahab was sitting there and he said, I want my cousin's land. Navos was a relative of Ahab, and he says, I want that land. I want it to be my garden. And he couldn't get it, and he got sick, and he went into his sick bed because he couldn't get Navos's field. Izebel sent her guards to go kill Navos and his entire family, wipe out the entire family. And Achab ended up inheriting the land. He was the closest relative that was alive. And once that happened, the ruach of Nevos, the spirit of Nevos and Shemayim, his neshama, begged to take revenge and was granted permission to come down. This is a Gemara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed Nevos, well, it's a Gemara, it's a straight out pasuk in Melachim Beis and in Divrei HaYamim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed the false prophets, like Tzidkiyah ben Kenana, he's the famous one who did Karen Telusha from Bava Kama, Bezum Abez, if you never learned Navi before, right? But Tzidkiyah ben Kenana and all the false prophets, they came along and they gave a prophecy that Achab was going to win the war with Yehoshaphat. They came and they gave that prophecy against Aram. They were going to win the war, all from the Ruach of Nevos. The Ruach of Nevos became a false prophecy in the mouths of those Nevi'im, in order to kill Achab and cause him to be killed. And the reason why, says the Malbim, is because when a person is murdered, the spirit is agitated. The ruach is agitated. It can't do what it needs to do in Shemayim. It can't go up. It becomes, so to speak, almost like a ghost. And it waits to take revenge against the one who murdered him. Waits to take revenge. Nevos got that permission and became that spirit of folly, a ruach of folly in the mouths of the Nevi'im. That's the kapara that was happening here as well. When the Egla Arufa happens, it indicates that the ruach of the one that was killed now will be able to get done what it needs to be done in order to get his revenge on the one who murdered him. In fact, the Yalkut Reuveni says exactly this. When a ruach dies, when a person dies and he's murdered, his spirit travels. It's lost and travels throughout the land, cannot go up to Shemayim the same way a normal ruach goes up. This doesn't happen to every person, you should know. If a person is killed by, let's say, the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, or an enemy of the Jews, somebody's killed that way, that doesn't matter. The neshama goes straight up to Shemayim, up to the highest level of Gan Eden. But if a person is killed stam, by a murderer, not for a Jew-related because you're a Jew crime, but something like that, then the ruach is lost. And maybe it's because he did or said something when he was being killed that shouldn't have been said. Maybe it's because of that. That's why, you should know, for those people who know, Yirmiyah went up to Yoshiah to go hear what Yoshiah was saying as he was being killed by all the spears, etc. He went to go hear what he was saying. Regardless, when the Ruchos are not able to go up and they're not able to do anything, they have tremendous, terrible trials running away from the Klovim Aze Nefesh, these evil dogs that chase them. That's what it means, that the ground was screaming with Hevel's blood when Cain killed Hevel. Hadam Tzoak It's crying out to me from the ground. The ruach can accuse other Jews for not helping him. The ruach can be involved for allowing that murder to happen. The ruach is allowed, is granted clemency by a Kadosh Baruch Hu to do whatever it wants to get other people in trouble. In that sense, the only respite the soul gets is when the soul of the murderer is taken as well. That's why we have no mercy on a person who murders. Because mercy, having rachamim on a person who murdered, causes the one who was murdered to have such tsaris before he goes through what he needs to do. And once again, it only has to do with a person's sins. It doesn't happen to just anyone. What's up?
The murderer?
Yeah. It's possible that could cause a mitzvah that would allow the ruach to go straight up to Shemayim if the guy does tshuva. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. I'm just quoting from the Yalkut Reuveni. There's a gemara like this in Makos. For those who know, it's, I believe, on Daf Hema Beis with Yehuda ben Tavoi. You for sure have heard it. He killed a single Eid Zomim when he shouldn't have. Right? Shem ben Shetach went up to him and said, how could you have killed an Eid Zomim? You're only supposed to kill Eidim Zomim. And if there's two of them, there's only one Eid Zomim. So Yehuda ben Tavoi went to his grave and prostrated on his grave. He used to go to his grave and cry every single day. They heard screams coming from the grave. They thought it was the one who was murdered, right? The one who was in the ground screaming about Yehuda ben Tavoi. Yehuda ben Tavoi said, no, it's me. I'm the one screaming, I'm the one crying out, and you'll know because tomorrow I'm going to die and you won't hear the screams anymore. 10 generations later, Rav Acha, the son of Rava, comes along and says, who knows, maybe it was the murdered guy who was screaming, and Yehuda ben Tavoi finally made up with him in Shemayim, and that's why he stopped screaming. Do you hear this line? Yehuda ben Tavoi is saying, no, guys, it's not anything supernatural. I am screaming for doing tshuva in the Beis HaKvaros, right? That's what I'm doing over here. So don't worry, tomorrow I'm going to die, it's going to be gone. And comes Rav Acha Breda Rava, literally 10 generations later. Yehuda ben Tavoi was an early Tana. Rav Acha Breda Rava is a 5th generation Amora, maybe even 6th generation Amora. And he comes along and says, nah, that's not a raya. Not a proof whatsoever. It could be it was the murdered, that a guy who's killed does scream out loud, and he just made up with him in Shemayim. That means the soul of the murdered screams. Do you hear that? It's the most unbelievable thing in the world. And Rav Achab Reed Rav said it took it as like obvious. It's quite a bit to talk about over here, but the Yaakov Rabbeinu and the Malbim seem to be saying it. The Al-Sheikh says the same. It takes a lot to be able to go through. So what do we do today? Learned about Egla Rufa, number one, why Egla Rufa exists. We'd mentioned the Mori Nebuchadnezzar, the Marshal, the Ramban, as well as Rav Hirsch himself. We went to Rashi, the Rashbam, this morning, the Rabbeinu B'chai, the Ibn Ezra, and the Tam Vidas that explained the purpose of this. We went into the worms, which was mainly from the Panayach Raza, the Be'er Basada quotes at Targum Yonis Menuzil, with the Partizios in the Imre Shammai. We went into the Rabbeinu B'chai as well, Tami Dekra, right, that went into it. And then after we mentioned the Panam Yafos and the Chassam Sofer Nitziv, and the very end, the Malbim, the Akruvini, about what happens to the Ruach of a person after he dies. Shalom, everyone. Have a good job.